Hey, welcome to another episode of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford, and today's episode is all about how a former restaurant worker went through lots of odd jobs and eventually became the head of engineering for a social networking startup. But first, a quick word about this season's wonderful sponsor. Whether you want to build your portfolio or you're ready to create your first web app, Linode can get you there. Linode is a cloud hosting service that provides virtual servers you can use to get your app, website, or another service online. Their pricing is simple, with no hidden fees, and packages start from just $5 a month. But Linode also has the infrastructure to grow with you as your projects take off. Choose Linode for your next project and support Learn to Code with Me at the same time by going to linode.com/learntocode. You'll get $100 in free credit when you create your account. Can't wait to see what you build. And we're back. In today's episode, I talk with Jesse Weigel. Jesse is a head of engineering at Tabella, a Christian social networking startup, as well as a live coder for the Free Code Camp YouTube channel. He lives in Steubenville, Ohio, right near Pittsburgh. The reason why I reached out to Jesse is because his career path is incredible. He went from washing dishes at a restaurant to becoming a software engineer, with lots of twists and turns and other odd jobs along the way. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, how Jesse made the transition from the food and service industry to the tech industry. We chat a lot about what his life was like early on when he first began learning how to code. We also spend significant time talking about his first few jobs in tech, how he found clients as a freelancer, and what he learned from all of these different roles that he found himself in. Then we get into what Jesse is doing today in his full-time job where he manages others. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on whichever podcast player you're listening on. All right, enjoy the interview. Hey, Jesse, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to talk to you because you and your wife are the first husband and wife duo I've ever interviewed. Now, I spoke to your wife about a year ago. She's also a self-taught coder, which I think is really awesome. And I'm really glad to have this new milestone to have a married couple on two different times, but two self-taught coders. It's really great.
Yeah, it's awesome to have her be into coding as well. We can talk to each other about our work issues and understand each other. That's been really cool.
Yeah, so I think that's a perfect segue into just talking about your story and how you started coding.
All right, yeah. So I've always been interested in electronics. Growing up, I didn't really have a computer or access to the internet until I was a teenager. But then at that point, I was fascinated by it. I would frequently break my parents' computer and then rush to try to figure out how to fix it before they found out about it. And so that's how I first got into just learning more about computers and how they worked. In high school, I did some basic HTML and CSS in Notepad. So I had a class where we typed everything out in Notepad on Microsoft Windows. And it was very basic. I think I made a website about the movie The Matrix because that came out around that time and I was very into The Matrix. And I didn't really do much with programming. I went to college and I took a basic programming class. And I think it was C++. Yeah. So I did a C++ class. And I remember building a calculator. And I liked it, but I didn't go on with it. My degree was actually in business. So I didn't do much with programming. I had a couple different various jobs that had nothing to do with programming. Manager at a restaurant, a waiter. I actually taught at a high school. I taught theology and Latin at a high school. And after a few years of that, I realized my family started to grow. And I said, you know what, I really can't support my family on this salary. I need to find something else. And I got together with a friend of mine from high school who had a media marketing company and needed someone to work. And at first, I started ghostwriting blogs and quickly realized that they needed a programmer. And if I taught myself how to do the work, I could pick up more hours and make some more money. So it was partially out of curiosity that I knew I liked that type of work, and then partially just out of need that I had a wife and we had two children and I needed to pay the bills. So my friend was awesome and said, hey, if you can figure out how to do this, I'll pay you to do it. So take some time and figure it out and do it. And that's how it went. And so I taught myself through free resources, just increasingly complex tasks. So at first it was just very basic, like changing CSS styles. I did a lot of WordPress work, which if you're not familiar with WordPress, it's a content management system, and you could do a lot with what we would call today no code or low code. But I found out a little bit more about JavaScript in those early days. And it seemed really difficult at the time, but I realized that's where it's at. That's where the magic happens, is with JavaScript. So anytime I had a chance to get into JavaScript, I would. And around that time is when Free Code Camp first came out. And that was an amazing resource for me. I got a chance to volunteer with Free Code Camp at later on down the road in my story, which was kind of amazing because that was a resource that helped me out a lot. At some point, I gained the confidence to get clients on my own, and I was freelancing for a while, and I did enough work and built up enough resume to get my first programming job. So this was maybe about 2 or 3 years after first starting to code for money that I was able to get my first full-time programming job at a small university. And that's, I feel like, when I felt like I was really starting to become a programmer. Before that, I was not very confident in my skills at all, because when you're on your own and you don't know any other programmers, there's always this doubt, like, am I doing this right? I don't know. So, I mean, you'd watch other programmers on YouTube, and usually it's rehearsed on YouTube. So it always seemed like everyone was better than me. Now, looking back on it, I think, well, yeah, you could do as many takes as you want and just put out the finished product on YouTube. But at the time, I was very intimidated. So I guess I didn't know what it was called at the time, but I guess we would call that imposter syndrome, where you just doubt your own skills and think, people are paying me to do this, but I don't really know what I'm doing. But that was, I guess, kind of the brief version of my journey to being a full-time programmer. Now, after that, I got increasingly more senior roles. So I got more into JavaScript. When React started getting big, I realized, like, hey, React is pretty cool. I need to learn how to do that. And I've been in the React ecosystem for, I'd say, about 5 years now.
Oh, wow. So I probably should have asked this earlier, what year was it then when you first started learning? And I know you had like a long and kind of windy journey, yeah. But I'm talking about like when you first started, even through that ghostwriting blog that you did, and you started to code a bit.
So that would have been, my second child would have been still pretty young. So I'm guessing that's around 2012 when I first like took the leap and quit my full-time job to pursue what became a coding career.
Okay, cool. 2012. And then you mentioned Free Code Camp when it first came out. Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember that year. It was after. So I didn't find them right away. But I remember early on, they had a live stream on New Year's Eve. And I remember being on my exercise bike at my house, and the kids were asleep and my wife was asleep. And I'm staying up late to watch the Free Code Camp live stream on New Year's Eve. That's how kind of excited I was about it, that I wasn't at a party and I wasn't watching the ball drop. I was watching this Free Code Camp live stream on New Year's Eve. And I had the opportunity to do my own New Year's Eve live stream at some point as well, because I was inspired by that Free Code Camp live stream.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, I feel like I vaguely remember seeing that, because I started learning... Oh gosh. So I think it was 2013, because I started Learn to Code with Me about a year later, and that was in 2014. But I don't remember when I first came across Free Code Camp, actually. It wasn't that early on though, because I know where I was learning initially, and it it wasn't free code camp, but then I do remember relatively early on, maybe like 2015 or something, coming across free code camp, but I guess it was already established to some degree at that point. Anyhow, I feel like I do vaguely remember that, but okay. So it sounds like for a few years you were doing different kinds of like smaller freelance roles, and that was with a friend, right?
Yeah, that was with a friend, my friend Zach, and he was a few years younger than me in school, but his brother was in the same grade as me. And I spent a lot of time at his house. We used to hook up our computers and have LAN parties and play video games together. So we were all pretty close. And yeah, it was really good luck, just a chance encounter. My dad, actually, who knew I was looking for work, saw him at a wedding and mentioned to him that I was looking for work. And Zach mentioned to my dad, hey, I've got this company. Here's my card. Tell Jesse to call me. And through that, I got back in touch with him, which I hadn't talked to him for a few years. And yeah, and he started me out. And this is going to sound a little embarrassing because of what programmers make now, but I started out at $10 an hour. But this was ghostwriting for blogs, and this was, you know, back in around 2012. But he said, I'm going to start you at $10 an hour because I start everybody at $10 an hour. But every few months, we're going to meet, and you're going to get a raise every, I think it was quarterly. And he stuck with that. He was true to his word, and he stuck with that. And I took on harder and harder projects. So it ended up really helping me out in a tough situation. I was very close to accepting a job. Actually, I got offered the job to work stacking boxes at a Walmart distribution center. And I had to make the decision, like, am I going to continue with this coding job that wasn't much of anything at the time? Or am I going to take this job at a Walmart distribution center, which did come with benefits, but I would have been capped. You know, I would have been working there and long hours, working through the night most times, and my life would have been very different if I had taken that job. But I really believed in, I guess, my ability to learn and to do this. So it was a tough decision. And I had people were really strongly encouraging me to say, hey, you know, you got a family, you got to think about stability for them, you got to take this job. And I almost took it. I went through all the tests. I even had to do a drug test and everything for this job. And then at the last minute, I said, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to turn the offer down. And that put me on the path. And like, I was determined, I have to make this work. You know, I have to make coding work.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I can imagine being in a situation like that. And it's funny when you said $10 an hour, because when my first tech job that I had, and well, you can see me because I have video on, but for the listeners, I'm using air quotes, because my first, you know, quote unquote tech job was basically being an assistant to a web developer who was building an e-commerce site for a local business in my area. At the time, I was living in Pennsylvania, which is where I grew up. And I would go there every day for like 4 or 5 hours a day and just do a lot of really mundane work. And I was making $15 an hour at the time. And I was relatively fresh out of college. I knew it wasn't very much money, but I was just really excited to like have an opportunity to start freelancing, because I knew that once I sort of had one project under my belt, I could move on to, you know, more things. I could use that as like an example on my resume or portfolio or whatever to get another job and get another job and then slowly start to earn more over time. So I feel like there's no shame in, you know, starting at a really low hourly rate, even though I know so many things online, it's like, you know, $50, $80, $100 an hour. But a lot of those people, they don't start there, right? Like they have to get there. They get there over time unless if they're senior, right? So yeah. Anyway, thank you for sharing that. I think that's like really great. When you were working with your friend though, was that like more than 40 hours a week? How many hours were you doing?
So my billable hours, the hours I actually get paid for, varied widely based on what clients that we had at the time and how much work we had from those clients. So there were some months where once a week I would go to, at the time he lived in the same, well, he lived close enough that I could go to his place, and we would pull all nighters. and we would work on code and help each other. He had like two offices set up in his apartment. He was single and had the space that his apartment was set up very nicely for basically for an office setting. And I would learn a lot during those all-night sessions of coding. But then there were other times when we didn't have that much work, and I would fill up a lot of my time with learning. And then I started to think maybe I could do this on my own and get my own clients and kind of even out the work. But I, to be totally honest, like to the world, I projected this confidence like, hey, I'm doing this computer stuff and it's going really well. But internally, I was always, the first few years, I was always nervous because I never knew if I would have hours from month to month or how much I would make. And I should say my wife was also working at the time. So she worked as a professor at a local university, and she also took a part-time job doing event planning at that university, which was more of a seasonal job. Some months out of the year, it would be very intensive and I would do less work. And then some months out of the year, there wasn't much to do and I would try to do more work. I know it was frustrating for her when I didn't have work and I was spending all my time learning. It was hard for her to understand. I think she understands a lot better now that she's in the industry, how important that was. But it was tough for us during that period of me freelancing. We had our third child, so it was tough. It wasn't like, I think sometimes, like you said, you see all these well-paying coding jobs and you think, you know, it's almost like easy mode. You learn how to code, you get a great job, and you're set. But when you're first starting out, that's not really how it is. Until you get some experience, it's not easy mode. It's not really set that there's a clear path to take. So I don't regret the decisions to enter this industry, and I'm very happy with where I ended up. But it was tough at first, and a lot of self-doubt.
Yeah, having inconsistent work can be, yeah, really difficult, especially when it's not just you, it's you and your family. And do you have four kids now, or is it three?
We have four now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember because, as I said at the start, I spoke to your wife last season. We'll link to her episode in the show notes page so folks can go back and check that out if they like. And I remember her talking about that. But yeah, I can definitely see how that would be an uncertain or kind of uneasy situation. And out of curiosity, how long were you two married, like when this was going on? So when the work was inconsistent, when she was working the full-time job, the part-time job, and then your work would really ebb and flow.
Yeah. So we were married in 2007, and this all started around 2012. So, you know, we were still, I would say, babies at marriage, right? We were, you know, we'd only been married a few years and we were new parents as well. So it was stressful. And I really appreciate my wife being there for me during those times when we didn't have a lot. Like we didn't go, we actually, her parents paid for us to go on vacation quite a few years in those early years because, you know, we had enough money to pay our bills and that was about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, as you said, now you and your wife are both working in tech. It's just, you know, part of your journey, and you're somewhere else now, and I'm sure heading a lot of new places in the future. But thank you for sharing some of that, the things, you know, early on. So, okay, so previously though, before you were working with your friend and having these fluctuating work schedules where you could work a lot or work a little, you primarily worked in like the restaurant service industry, I believe. Was there anything from that industry specifically that helped you when you started working in tech?
Yeah. So I think I learned a lot of what we call soft skills, or I would say people skills, from working in the restaurant industry. So I worked at various positions. And so I was a dishwasher at one point. I was an assistant manager, a bartender, a server. So I did, except for cooking, I did pretty much all the jobs you can do at a restaurant. And I learned that it's not enough just to do a job sometimes, but when you do a job and you help the people around you feel good about their experience, that's really where it's at in the restaurant industry. It's not really that hard to take an order for food. Like, you're allowed to write it down, So it's pretty, the mechanics of it are pretty easy. You write down what someone tells you, and then you take that back and enter it into a computer or hand it off to the kitchen. What the key is that you try to help the people that come into the restaurant. I always tried to help them feel a little bit better about themselves and about their experience than when they came in. Like if I could leave them feeling better when they leave than when they first came in, I thought that was a success. So taking that into coding, especially when I was freelancing and working directly with clients, it wasn't enough just to say, all right, I can get this done and be kind of gruff about it, but really to try to help the client's business be better, try to help them to understand why we're doing this, why it's important to have a web presence. Or I was doing some search engine optimization work at the time, try to explain to them, why is this important for your business? And I spent a lot of time talking on the phone. Most of my clients were remote. I did have some in-person meetings with clients, but making sure that they felt good about what was going on and really making sure that you took responsibility. So, you know, when you make a mistake in a restaurant, you apologize and you make it right. You say, you know, hey, this one's on us. This is on the house. You know, I'm going to pay for this if I mess this up or do something. And that really helped. There was one situation where, and this was probably the worst mistake I ever made in my coding journey. I was changing some DNS records and I accidentally took down the email service for a business for like 3 days. So no one in the business could send or receive emails. And this was a big, like, home renovation business in near New York City. And I told the client, you know, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I will pay. They actually called someone else to fix the problem at first. They called their previous tech person because they didn't realize I was the new tech person. And I said, listen, I'll pay the bill. Whatever it is, I'll pay the bill. I'll do what I can to make this right. And I was super nervous about it, but that's what I felt was right. That's what it had been instilled in me that, you know, hey, you got to take care of your customer. And thankfully, because of that, the woman who owned the business said, you know, hey, like, we're not going to mention it again. It's all fixed. And I kept on working for her and actually got several new clients referred to me through her. So my biggest mistake actually became something that kind of bonded us closer in our business relationship. And I feel like I got that from the service industry, from the restaurant industry, of the people that come into your restaurant are not, it's not an adversarial relationship. It's a relationship where you want them to feel good about the services that you're getting. And, you know, sometimes that means you got to take a loss to make them happy. And so I think that helped me. And you deal with a lot of negativity in that industry as well. Sometimes people just aren't in a good mood when they come in and you have to deal with that and still smile and be happy about it. So that kind of maybe toughened me up a little bit to deal with rejection and negativity and not to let that get me down.
Oh yeah. I worked briefly in high school as a hostess at a few different places. So, you know, greeting the customer and seeing them. And yes, I know firsthand that it could be difficult, especially if someone comes in there and they're not in a great mood and you have to kind of navigate that. So yeah, totally understand, totally get where you're coming from. I'm excited to talk more about freelancing and getting your first client, but we're going to take a quick break to hear from our episode sponsor. We'll be back in a second. Whether you're just starting to tinker with code or you already have several projects under your belt, Linode is a great place to host your websites and apps. In fact, with Linode, you can do way more than just that. You can set up your own VPN, run an online store, build a game server. There are so many possibilities. You can fully customize your Linode server yourself, or if you want to make things super easy, you can use one of their one-click apps to deploy a pre-built setup in seconds. They've got apps for WordPress, Minecraft, GitLab, and loads more. If you ever get stuck, Linode's customer service team is on hand 24/7, 365 days a year, over the phone and online. In fact, they've won a whole bunch of awards for their customer service, so you know you're going to be in good hands. I highly recommend using Linode for your next project. And you can actually get $100 in free credit when you create a new account with them. Just go to Linode.com/learn-to-code and click the Create Free Account button to get started. All right, and we're back. So Jesse, how did you then go about getting your first client? Like, where did you find them? Because that is what people ask all the time who wanted freelance, whether full-time or part-time, where and how do I get a client?
Yeah, this is very difficult, especially if your focus is on learning how to code. That skill set that helps you code isn't necessarily the same skill set that'll help you get clients, especially early on. So I looked on the freelance websites. So I think Freelancer is one of the sites I was on. I went on, was it Angie's List or something like that? So basically every freelance website I could find, I made an account on there and I started doing work. And some of the work was very low pay, but you have to build up a reputation on these sites. I made sure I put it out there to everyone I knew, friends, family, that I was looking for clients. And I have to be honest, the best clients were through word of mouth. So I built up, aside from a few jobs here and there that I got through freelancing websites, my best jobs came from one of my students when I taught high school. She was in college at the time, and her boyfriend was a bodybuilder who wanted a website. I did that website. His friend had a startup who also needed a website. I did that website. That friend, his parents, had a business. They needed a website work done. And then through that business, I also got some other clients. So it's weird how everybody was connected. It was all personal connections. And I did a good job with one, and that led to another and another and another, which I feel like that goes back to making sure your clients are happy, right? And not to burn bridges, because not all of those jobs were easy. Some of them were very difficult. Some clients are more demanding than others, but always making sure to not lose my temper when frustrations came up kind of led me to getting more and more clients. And each client that I got, it was a bigger client. It was more money, more work. So that's really how I got the work. And like putting myself out there, you have to put yourself out there to the people that you know first, which is tough because you don't have a lot of confidence at first. And sometimes you have to take jobs that aren't that good and make mistakes. I remember I shook a man's hand at a restaurant once and said, I can do this for $200. And I ended up putting so much work. I told a man that I could do an e-commerce website for $200 and had to work through payment integration and setup and putting in, so many products into this website. And I had never done it before, but that ended up being a great relationship. We still follow each other on social media, that client and mine. And I'm sure I could probably reach out to that person if I really needed to and said, hey, do you need anything done or whatever? And I'm sure they would try to help me out. But that's even when I realized that was going to take longer, I shook that man's hand and told him it would be that price. So I stuck with that price. But that was one more site that now I could say I successfully launched an e-commerce website, which is a big deal. So sometimes you have to do things like that just to build up your resume.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you actually went back to him and said you had to do a price adjustment, but you sort of answered the question. You said you didn't, you finished the site with that $200 budget. But again, every mistake or misstep, that we take along the way, we can learn from. And then in the future, you knew if you were ever going to an e-commerce website, you fully understood all the work involved and the things to think through that could impact the price. But yeah, when you're first starting out, it is so hard to know how long something will take and how much work is required. It's like almost impossible, or really impossible actually, until you do it. And then you figure it out and you're like, okay, wait a second, this is actually a lot harder than I thought. And I love though, what you said at the start of the last response you just gave about how the coding skill set and getting a client skill set, they don't really overlap. They're kind of like two very different things. And even if you're using a site like the freelancer.com or the Upwork or what have you, you still have to be able to like communicate to people and apply for jobs and all of that. And that's a separate skill in itself.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say I just still think that I'm not great at finding clients. Yeah, like I've done it before, but I'd say that's probably, it's a weird feeling to try to sell your own skills to someone else. And I guess when you're interviewing for jobs, that's kind of what you're doing as well. So I would say it's a skill you need to have, whether you want to freelance or whether you're going to interview for a job. You need to be comfortable with being honest about your skills. And that's not really the time for humility, right? I like humility. And if you watch, I do a YouTube show and everybody knows that I'm pretty humble and I show my mistakes because I do a live stream. And there's a lot of mistakes on there. But when you're actually with a client, you need to have confidence, not a false confidence. You know, don't lie about your skills. But after you've been at it for a while, you kind of realize that even if you don't exactly know how to do something, you know you can figure it out. Once you work through so many problems, you kind of get a feeling that, wow, this seems overwhelming now. But I know once I break down this problem and work through it step by step, I'm gonna figure out how to do it.
Yeah, of course. And as you said, not having a false confidence, I think that's a really good thing for people to take away, to always have integrity, you know, not to lie or to mislead people. Because if you do that, even perhaps unintentionally, it could really backfire in the future. And as you said earlier, one of your biggest mistakes freelancing with the DNS mail server situation, it ended up bringing you two closer together. And you just told the person what happened, you explained the situation. And even though I'm sure that was really scary and hard, it ended up working out kind of like for the better, it sounds like. I mean, it brought you guys closer together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was, when I say it was hard, I know when I realized what happened, my wife had just made dinner and my wife and the kids were all at the dinner table. So I left the computer and I went up and I had dinner and I was shaking. I was physically shaking because I realized how bad it was of what had just happened. And that was probably the most anxious and scared that I had ever been at any job, and let alone coding. But I got through it. And it's an experience I can look back on now and say, when things get bad, I can think back on that and think, all right, that worked out. You know, I can get through this.
Yeah, you turned that situation around. And I can only imagine how difficult that would be. I mean, I remember I took out unintentionally just my mom's email because I had like her website and I moved something over and I didn't realize the mail was separate because it was through G Suite and blah, blah, blah. But her mail went down and she's, you know, it's my mom, but she's calling me like, I can't send emails. And I'm like, oh gosh, I have to get on the phone with like, you know, these different people to figure out what's going on, like the Google support, because I had no idea. Anyway, that was kind of stressful. So I can't even imagine for an actual client, like that would be really difficult. But as you said, you've moved past it. And now you have that also as a point of comparison in any other difficult situation, which is great. So nowadays, though, in 2021, are you still freelancing at all? Or no, you're just working full time?
Yeah, so I'm working full time. Occasionally, I take a freelance client if it's so my rule is usually, it has to be a project that I'm just so passionate about, or they're just willing to give me so much money, I can't turn it down. So those are my criteria now, because any additional work I do, that's time away from my family. So it has to be something that I think this is a sacrifice now that'll help my family in the long run. Like maybe this Christmas will be better for my kids because I'll have a little extra money to spend on presents, or, you know, maybe for vacation this year, we can order food every day and, you know, something like that. So those are the terms that I think now when I think about taking on a freelance client. But my main focus is on my full-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes a ton of sense. You have to weigh the pros and the cons and the trade-offs and all of that. So with your full-time job, though, when – I know you said this in the beginning, like the chronological kind of order of things, but it's – if I recall, it was a few years after you were freelancing that you got your first full-time job. What made you want to stop freelancing full-time to do a full-time developer position?
Yeah, so we had three children, and not knowing how much I would make month to month was very stressful. It was stressful for my wife. It was stressful for me just to not have that steady income. And then not having benefits was also stressful. There were times, like, to be 100% honest, I wasn't making enough money. We were on government assistance at times for, we live in Ohio. There's some great programs, especially for the children, for them to get medical care. But like for me, I didn't go to the dentist for probably 5 years, right? It's just like, that's not something that happened. I didn't go to the doctors, right? Luckily, I had no major issues, but I knew I couldn't continue like that forever. I wasn't really saving anything for retirement. So I thought, I need to find something that has benefits and something that's steady. You know, I was willing to give up some of my freedom and kind of cap my earnings and go for something a little bit more steady. Luckily, there a job had opened up at a university that was, it would have been a 10-minute commute for me. So it was very close. It was the same university my wife was teaching at. I got that job. The job wasn't supposed to be about coding. Coding would have only been a small part of it. But once I got in there and started working and they realized what my skill set was, I was able to kind of turn the job into a full-time, I would have called it like a front-end developer position. That wasn't really my title at the time. I actually can't remember what my title was. You wouldn't have thought I was a programmer based on my title, but it was a front-end developer job. Through that, I was able to learn a lot. They were willing to help me pay for training. I went to my first tech conference with that job. I started to learn React when I was there. I started my YouTube channel, which led to me doing live streaming for Free Code Camp's YouTube channel. At that point, I got invited to speak at conferences, and I was really able to grow my network. Through there, I found my next job, which ended up being a senior software engineer at Dick's Sporting Goods. And that was when I really started to feel like a real programmer, because I had multiple job offers at once and was able to pick the job that I wanted. Actually had a few companies bidding a little bit higher for me, which made me feel awesome. Like, wow, people really want me. They want me to work. And so I worked at Dick's Sporting Goods for about a year and a half. And then someone approached me about a startup, and we met quite a few times. I wasn't 100% sure I wanted to go into that startup life, but I liked the idea for the startup, and I said, well, I still need to be able to support my family. If you can raise enough money that we know that I can still support my family, then, you know, talk to me. And they went out and raised capital from venture capital, you know, funders, and they got back to me and said, hey, we can secure your salary. Would you like to come work for us? So I did. So now I'm at a startup called Tabella, and I'm head of engineering for Tabella. And I have a team of engineers. We're fully remote. We work from all over the globe. And it's exciting. It's different work, because now I'm into management as well as coding, which is, it's very different to be on the management side, because sometimes your work day is filled with talking to people and you don't feel productive. Coming from being full-time coding, you felt productive when you wrote code. And now I've had to shift my thought process to say, if one of my engineers is having a rough day and I spend, you know, an hour on a video chat with them talking about their issues, that's productive, right? That's my job. So it's definitely been a shift for me, but it's interesting. It's good. I'm kind of torn between the two worlds of coding and managing. I'm not sure which way my career is going to go at this point. It's kind of an interesting time for me.
Yeah, that's really cool. The other thing I was thinking when you were talking, because you were mentioning the difference between like being an individual contributor, right, versus a manager, and now you're managing engineers, and it's just a different frame of thought. But simply transitioning from a company like Dick's Sporting Goods, which I don't know how many people work there, thousands and a ton of people work there, to going to a startup, that's like a night and day change as well.
Yeah. So Dick's Sporting Goods, I worked at their headquarters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they had at headquarters somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 people in that building. So it was significant. My team had 8 engineers on it, as well as a designer, QA person, an engineering manager. And that was just one team of many, many teams. There were teams that just worked on one section of one page of their website. So when I was there, we were actually building a new software to run on all the cash registers. So it was exciting. It was a greenfield project. When I came in, I was able to pick the front end tech stack, which we used React Native running on Windows, which was exciting. And it's still kind of, I don't want to say experimental, but at the time it had just came out that was a thing that was possible to build a Windows app with React Native. So that was I had a great time there. I learned so much about proper programming procedures and like test-driven development, pair programming. I got a lot of experience working with people who had been an engineer for, I don't know, like 20 years and had been in the industry. So I loved it there. It was a great experience. It really took a lot to get me to leave there. And I still, if anybody from my team at DSG ends up listening to this, shout out to everyone at DSG. That was a great learning experience for me.
Well, that's awesome that you had such a good, great experience there. How long have you been working at the startup now?
I've been there about a year now. I've been here about a year. We're building a social network and, it's launched. It's in the App Store. Specifically, it's a social network for churches. So that's I didn't really realize it so much until I talked with the founder that it's really an underserved community, not only in this country, but especially in a lot of countries. There's really no apps for that. So we actually have a large presence in the Philippines right now. There's nothing like this in the Philippines. We have a large presence in the Spanish-speaking world. Most of the people that work there are bilingual, English and Spanish. We actually have quite a few engineers from Brazil as well. So I feel at a disadvantage because I only speak English, but I'm trying to brush up on my Brazilian Portuguese as much as I can to help interacting with my engineers. But it was a challenge for me. So it was an area that I could see was in need. And also a big challenge, like building a social network is difficult. So it felt like this is something where I can really expand my skill set, not only as a manager, but also as a programmer to be able to solve problems that I had never solved before and at a scale that I had never worked at before.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So are your customers churches then? So like a church will sign up in their congregants or whatever the proper term is will join like through the app on that specific church?
So right now the app is free for anyone to join. No one has to pay anything. The churches don't have to pay anything. But normally a church will have a paper, they call it a bulletin. And on the back side of the paper bulletin, there will be local businesses who sponsor advertisements on that bulletin. And the people that go to the church, they can say, hey, you know what? I want to support this business because they support my church. So our business model is around taking those same local businesses that will currently advertise on the back of a piece of paper, which some people may not ever even see. And we want to get them on our app to advertise. So when you go on the app, you won't be hit with a lot of advertisements for things that you may or may not want for companies that you don't know anything about. What you'll see is advertisements for people in your local community, people that you know that you may see at church. And I feel like that's something that's not necessarily being done, definitely not by your big social media networks. And it keeps things kind of local, especially after, you know, everything happened with the coronavirus. We felt like this could really be beneficial to people who are used to having some sort of in-person community. And now that's kind of been taken away from them. There's still a way to connect. There's still a way for people to feel, you know, there was a time that the church may have been the center of a lot of activity. So a lot of social activity and community outreach, a lot of charity outreach. And back when you walked to your local parish, that made sense. But now people are so spread out, you may drive a while to get to your parish. You don't have that same sense of community we want to try to bring that back so that there is somewhere where people can go and reach out, help people who are in need, help their communities, and do that in a safe environment. We're very big on this being an app where your children could be on this app with and not have to worry about objectionable content. So we're very proactive about moderation. Normally, if you go to an app, something bad might get into the app and it needs to be reported first before they take it down. We want to be more proactive about moderation so that something would never get in and you would have to appeal to get it in. And that might mean that, hey, maybe you post an image of, let's just say, for instance, Jesus on the cross, right? That picture would mostly you have him shirtless. Well, our automated detection might look at that and say, that's objectionable material. And you might have to appeal that. And obviously we would say, okay, you can let that in. You're a church. You can have a picture of Jesus. You're a church, right? But that's kind of our, that might be a little bit of an extreme example, but that's kind of our philosophy on that is we want this to be a safe place and we want it to be a positive environment. So much of social media, you go on there and you feel worse after you look at it than before. We would like for this to be a place where you feel better after coming there.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, when you're talking about just the pandemic and coronavirus and obviously like everything shut down, including churches and people would be going there in person all the time, that definitely makes a ton of sense why this would be even more in need or more in demand than ever before when people they're not even going there in person perhaps anymore. Maybe now they are because, some things are reopening, but yeah, that's really interesting. So we're actually running out of time, but I wanted to know at your current company, how many people are on the engineering team total?
Yeah, so we're still small. So we have three full-time engineers. We're actually hopefully bringing on a fourth engineer very soon. Just had an interview last week. And actually five, counting myself. So we have five full-time engineers, so still a small team. And we have a designer, our founder. We have someone full-time working on community outreach. And then we have some part-time people working. So we have someone in the Philippines working on site. And we're going to try to get some interns as well to help us out with, because we're really focused on the local community. So we really would love to have as many people in the local communities as possible, potentially working in some sort of affiliate capacity.
Yeah. So it's like 10 people, maybe give or take, some are part-time, but.
Yep. Still pretty small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's still, that's really awesome. And I feel like, I know when I used to work at a startup, I was about like the 15th person. It was in person, it wasn't remote, but that was such a special time. Like I look really, like when I look back on that time, I remember it very fondly. And I loved working at the company when it was that small. That actually made me realize I really like, well, now I just work by myself. So it's really small. It's just me. But it made me really learn a lot about myself and kind of my work preferences. And yeah, I was like, I really like the small, close-knit environment. So anyhow, yeah, I feel like that sounds like a great size of a company. So, okay, we have to wrap things up, but is there any final advice that you could just leave to listeners who are learning to code right now and maybe they're in a situation that you were, back in 2012, 2013, where things just feel like they're moving really slow and it's maybe not where they want to be and they're lacking confidence?
I would say, number one, you can do it. Believe in yourself. That may sound a little cheesy, but you definitely will face things that seem insurmountable. But keep going. Do a little bit at a time, and you'll gain more confidence. And then you'll be able to take on something a little bigger the next time. This is a great industry to be in. It's an opportunity that's life-changing. I didn't necessarily get in this just for the money, but to be honest, I've been able to provide for my family in a way that I never thought possible. Had I gone, let's say, a safer route, a more traditional route, we would have been fine. But now, I was able to provide to move my family into a bigger house, a better neighborhood, a safer neighborhood. This is potentially life changing. It's worth the work, and I would say a lot of people have come through, have felt those feelings of not being enough, of not being able to do this. And I say, you can definitely do this. My background, I don't have an engineering degree. That wasn't my background. And, you know, I was able to do this. I realized that I probably have some privilege that helped me that you may or may not have if you're listening to this. But you have value. You have, because of who you are as an individual, you have value to this industry. And there is going to be a company that is going to recognize that value and want to pay you good money to be there and to do good work. So keep at it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jesse, again, for coming on. Where can people find you online?
All right. So I'm most active probably on my my YouTube channel. And I'm also on Twitter, Jesse R. Weigel on Twitter. I'm on Instagram as well, jesse.weigel on Instagram. And, you know, join me for a live stream sometime and feel free to ask me any questions that you have. Send me a DM on Twitter or something. I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has, whether you're just starting out or you've been in the industry for a while. I love helping people gain confidence and learn how to code. So yeah, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation of the website and search for the guest name. If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to my show on whichever podcast player you use. For more free tech-related resources, tips, and recommendations, visit the website and blog over at learntocodewith.me. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.